This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Certainly, I mean, it was a very great battle between me and Damon in the stage of the race. Tough race, I have to say, and he has done really a good job during that race. We both haven't done mistakes, and it was really, really, I would say, thrilling for you at the outside.
That was former Formula One driver Michael Schumacher, using English to talk clearly and confidently about his sport, motor racing.
If you find it difficult to speak English and would like some help to become more fluent, and maybe one day use English as confidently as a world-famous racing driver, then Better Speaking is for you.
Michael Schumacher's first language is German. He was born near Cologne in what was then West Germany in 1969 and started driving go-karts when he was only 4 years old. He later took up motor racing and, in 1994, won the first of his World Formula One championships. In the world of Formula One, English is the language that drivers from different countries often use to communicate with each other and with the world's media. Now, here's Michael Schumacher talking to journalists about a race he's just won against his rival, the British driver Damon Hill. Michael is pleased to be the winner, but he's also apologising for something.
Certainly, I mean, it was a very great battle between me and Damon in the stage of the race. Tough race, I have to say, and he has done really a good job during that race. We both haven't done mistakes, and it was really, really, I would say, thrilling for you at the outside. I have to say that I did make some comments this year that about Damon that I didn't have that kind of respect that I maybe had about somebody else. But I have to admit that I was wrong, because what he has done in the last two races in particular, and he must have done even before, has been a proper and fantastic job. And he has been a great rival. And I must say sorry for what I maybe said, but I'd like to congratulate him for all his good jobs he has done so far.
Michael Schumacher, very pleased to be a winner, but also apologising for criticising his rival, Damon Hill. I must say sorry for what I maybe said, he says.
BBCLearningEnglish.com.
And with me again in the studio is teacher and teacher-trainer Richard Hallows. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Callum.
But before we hear anything more from Richard, let's listen to Michael Schumacher again.
Certainly, I mean, it was a very great battle between me and Damon in the stage of the race. Tough race, I have to say, and he has done really a good job during that race. We both haven't done mistakes, and it was really, really, I would say, thrilling for you at the outside. I have to say that I did make some comments this year that about Damon that I didn't have that kind of respect that I maybe had about somebody else. But I have to admit that I was wrong, because what he has done in the last two races in particular, and he must have done even before, has been a proper and fantastic job. And he has been a great rival. And I must say sorry for what I maybe said, but I'd like to congratulate him for all his good jobs he has done so far.
Richard, how successful do you think he is as a speaker of international English?
I think he's a very successful user. He communicates very clearly. We can follow what he's saying with no problem at all. If there's anything that perhaps is interesting about the way he speaks that maybe we could learn lessons from is the way he contracts his grammar.
And what do you mean by that?
I'm talking particularly about the way he uses the present perfect. Mm. For example, he has been or he has done.
Tough race, I have to say, and he has done really a good job during that race. Really, I would say, thrilling for you at the outside.
This is exactly the way that he uses it, rather than he's been or he's done.
Now, native speakers would tend to use the contracted form, he's done. But is it wrong to use the full form?
It's not wrong. I mean, the meaning is still there. I'm just thinking how to make it easier for the speaker to speak more fluently.
And I suppose it's also easier for the listener as well, because it helps to preserve the sort of rhythm and pattern of English.
Mm, yeah, that's a very good point.
So in all of his speech, is there this pattern of not using contractions when a native speaker would normally use contractions?
Well, in fact, no. There are cases where he speaks with very good contractions.
I didn't have that kind of respect that I maybe had about somebody else.
And it does make his speaking, more fluent, it's easier to speak, but it's particularly interesting that it's the present perfect where he always makes this mistake.
Right. And it's interesting what you're saying about should have and should have, because the pronunciation of have changes quite considerably there.
Mm, it's this weak form in English, this sound, mm-hmm. which we use all the time. For example, my name, it's not Richard, it's Richard. Mm-hmm. Your name, it's not Callum, it's
Callum,
yeah, we use this all the time. So should have is an example of this, when it just makes your speech, more fluent.
Are there other examples of this contraction which are useful for students to be able to hear, to recognise, and to be able to say, produce themselves?
I think there's one particular... I mean, there are lots of examples. One particular one stands out in my mind, and this is thinking about conditionals, particularly maybe a third conditional, which is, it's very complicated grammatically to produce, and sometimes grammar structures like this are easier if you learn them phonologically, i.e. by sound.
Can you give us an example of this?
Well, if I break it down slowly, for example, if I had had more time, for example, I would have taken the bus. So it's a very long, complicated structure.
So if I had had more time, I would have taken the bus. And how do we contract that?
We'd say, if I'd had more time, I'd have taken the bus.
Right, so if I'd had more time, I'd have taken the bus.
Mm.
So we sort of lose, like you say, we squash down those words. They're still there, but they're very contracted, very small.
Mm. I think it makes learning grammar, remembering grammar, rather, the structure, much easier.
Let's have a look at another point. What about his pronunciation, for example, his intonation, how his voice goes up and down?
Yeah, although I find him quite easy to understand, I find myself sometimes switching off a little bit, not being very interested in what he has to say.
And why is that? Because, it's an interesting subject.
It is an interesting subject. It's all to do with the pattern of his voice, the intonation, the rise and fall of his voice.
And what is it about his intonation that, it makes you switch off?
OK, well, in German, their intonation is quite flat. It's quite different from English. And so, as an English speaker, I hear it as being a little bit boring.
Right, so if native speakers used that same intonation pattern, they would come across as boring. And this is perhaps something that's difficult for speakers of other languages with different intonation patterns, difficult for them to get right. So how can we help the students with this?
Well, it's a case of exaggerating your intonation, making it bigger, or recognising which intonation pattern goes with which attitude.
Attitude?
Well, for example, you can guess what mood I'm in, how I'm feeling, by the way I say a word. I can say the same word. Well, let's try. See if you can work out how I'm feeling. So, for example, if I say, Callum! How do I feel?
Well, excited, pleased to see me.
Amazingly, yes. Or perhaps, Callum.
Oh, well, there you're disappointed if I've done something that you disapprove of. Perhaps,
And what's the difference in my intonation there?
Well, it's the way your voice goes up and down and how you...
Which one has a kind of a bigger rise and fall? Is it the happy one or the not so happy?
Well, the one where you're pleased to see me seems to have a larger rise.
And that's generally a pattern that we have larger intonation rises for very positive attitudes and smaller ones for very negative ones. So this is why I hear Michael as being a little bit boring, perhaps, because it's quite a narrow intonation range.
Any other points connected to intonation?
We also use intonation to take turns in a conversation. Mm-hmm. So I use my intonation to tell you that I've finished speaking.
And so therefore the person you're speaking to knows that now it's their turn to speak, their turn in the conversation.
Yeah, and I do that by my intonation going down.
Right, so when you go down, you know that it's the end of the conversation, yeah. Or the end of my part of the conversation.
See if you can guess which is the final thing on my list of shopping here.
Okay.
So I went to the supermarket and I bought milk, bread, cheese, eggs.
Well, I would say eggs.
I think you get the idea.
Yes, yeah, so a downward turn in the intonation can indicate that that's the end of, in that example, list, but also the end, and now it's time for someone else to speak.
Yeah, so we can see how intonation is really important, A, for attitude, and B, for turn-taking.
Right. So to summarise then, what's your general advice for people who might have these particular pronunciation problems?
Well, thinking about contracting grammar, I think it's a good idea, if you have access to a tape and a course book, to maybe listen to the tape scripts again, read the tape scripts in the back of the book, and listen for specifically for any contractions of grammar that occur. And I think you'll be surprised how many there are. When you're thinking about your grammar, always try and reduce it to the minimum so that there's the shortest possible sounds, grammar sounds in there. Like our example, if I'd had more time, I'd have. Bum, 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 bum. Yeah? Thinking about intonation, I think, again, if you've got access to tape scripts, listen again and listen to people's intonation. Think about what attitude is the person trying to convey. Think about when people take turns when they're speaking, how does the intonation change? Huh? And when you're speaking, try and be interesting by increasing the range of your intonation.
Thank you very much, Richard. That was very interesting.
It's my pleasure.
Now, if you didn't quite catch all of Richard's better speaking tips, don't worry. Here's a chance to hear them again.
Richard's first piece of advice is, if you want to sound more fluent and natural in English, don't forget to make contractions. Instead of saying, he has done, for example, say, he's done.
And listen for specifically for any contractions of grammar that occur, and I think you'll be surprised how many there are.
Richard also warns learners of English to be particularly careful with contractions in long, complicated sentences, like conditionals.
We'd say, if I'd had more time, I'd have taken the bus.
And be careful with intonation. Make sure your English doesn't sound boring because your intonation is too flat.
Listen to people's intonation. Think about what attitude is the person trying to convey. Think about when people take turns when they're speaking, how does the intonation change?
That was Talk About English from bbclearningenglish.com.